Just orderly, so please call roll number. It is 7 o'clock. Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Here.
Commissioner Ludden? He signaled yes. Commissioner Underdunk?
Here.
President Brooks?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, consent agenda items A through E are routine. Then a motion, does any commissioner want any item pulled from the consent agenda items?
No.
Okay, I entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda items as presented.
So moved.
Sorry, second.
Dudley, and then second, Stephanie.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
All right, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdunk?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes.
All righty. It is our practice not to address questions at this time. However, we will take comments under advisement. Per a posted policy during the coronavirus crisis, all comments should have been submitted via email to Ms. Shepherd prior to the meeting. Lisa Shepherd, please read any public comment received via email.
All right, I'm just checking really quick to make sure we didn't receive any last minute. We did not. I have one from Mr. Heffman. I find it. Yeah, hold on. That was my request. Good afternoon. I have a question for the board at its meeting tonight. In light of COVID-19, the resulting closures of facilities and camp programs, and the resulting decrease in expected revenue, what steps has the Park District taken to reduce its own expenditures in terms of furloughs, termination of Park District staff? Does the Park District envision a budget shortfall as a result of the loss of revenue? And is the plan to address the shortfall focused on reducing expenses or increasing revenue through additional tax levies? Thank you. And that was Jeffrey Heffman.
All right.
That was all the comments.
Good. Okay. Lisa Shepherd is board secretary. You will conduct the election for the board president and then vice president.
All right.
Sorry, does someone get back to Mr. Heffman?
As you saw, it's a matter of the public. We don't answer questions at the board meeting, but if the board would like to direct me to answer his questions, I can. I did respond back to Mr. Heffman that says, it was my pleasure to read during the matter of the public. All the information he has asked is actually can be answered with F Part 4 packet and meeting minutes located on our website under the transparency portal and by listening to tonight's meeting. If they would like me to direct questions directly to him, I would be happy to do so at the board.
No, I just want to make sure that someone was reaching out to him.
Only if you guys direct me to, so same as any other board meeting.
I thought you just said you responded to his email already.
I just responded in that matter. He can find information on the
website. Yeah, that's fine.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. Going back to election of president, as board secretary, it is my pleasure to open nominations for president of the board. Are there any nominations for president?
I'd like to make a nomination.
Yes, Dudley?
Okay. Lisa Brooks.
Okay. Any other nominations? Okay, we have a nomination for president of Lisa Brooks. Can I have a second?
Second.
Hearing no further nominations for nomination of president are closed. This roll call voting for board president.
Stephanie again.
Hold on. Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdog?
Yes.
President Brooks? You have to vote for yourself. Okay. Yes.
He's back.
Lisa, you have to do it even if you vote against yourself.
I'm anticipating a coup. All right. Continue, please.
Okay. Motion passes for Lisa Brooks as president. As board secretary, it is my pleasure to open nominations for vice president of the board. Are there any nominations for vice president?
Yes, I nominate Stephanie Bond.
Second.
Is there any further nominations? Hearing no further nominations, the nomination for vice president are closed. Roll call voting approving Stephanie Bond as vice president, Park Board vice president. Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdunk?
Yes.
President Brooks? Yes. That motion passes for Stephanie Bourne as Vice President of the Board of Commissioners. All right. Throw it back to you, Lisa.
Okay. The new president will entertain a motion. The recommended motion, I move to appoint Michael Covey as treasurer, Robert Bush of Ansel Glink as general legal counsel and ethics officer, Lisa M. Shepherd as secretary to the board, executive director, Dudley Onderdonk as representative to the Glencoe Park, Glencoe Plan Commission, Lisa M. Shepherd and Jennifer L. Runkle as Freedom of Information Act officers, and Dudley Onderdonk as representative to the Glencoe Sustainability Committee. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Onderdonk?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Okay, I will now announce the appointments as listed below. Finance Committee of the Whole, the chair is the treasurer, Michael Covey. The members are all the commissioners. Committee of the Whole, I guess the chair would be the president, myself, Lisa Brooks. The members are all the commissioners. Now to announce the appointments of the Glencoe Beach and Lakefront Advisory Committee. The chair is Josh Lutton. The Watts Advisory Group chair is myself, Lisa Brooks. Early Childhood Advisory Group chair is Stephanie Warren. NSSRA, the liaison is Lisa Shepherd, executive director. So that appears to be all of the appointments. I know we don't, okay, but the policy, personnel policy committee is kind of rolled into all of this, but that is Josh Lutton's responsibility.
Okay, sounds okay. Good.
All right. Okay, financial report. 2 months of the fiscal year are complete. Carol, will you please provide a synopsis of the reports?
Sure. So the financial report is included in your packet. What you will note is because we're in the COVID pandemic, to do any type of relational comparison to prior years really becomes very difficult. And it's much easier, I think, once the month closes to kind of take a look at the projected scenarios that I provided at the last committee meeting. So I really won't make any different departments because to try and compare them to previous really this year is hard to do. But you can look forward to the next monthly update in May at the next committee meeting. I will say that as far as the total cash position, which is also part of that financial report, you'll see as of April 30th, we have approximately $12.9 million. I just, for comparison purposes, did do a check of last April. As of April 30th, and the cash position was $12.5 million. So while we obviously are in the pandemic, just as a comparison to last year at this time, you will also note by that financial report that we did reduce that cash position by about $376,000. So I will have more details really on the financial via the projections at the committee. That's what I can offer right now at this point.
Can you explain the pajama vine item? That's the negative 13,000.
Oh, and the projections? That's from the committee packet minute report, and that is a 10% return from Paderma on our member contributions for 2020. So they decided early on, I want to say it was late March, that they were going to return for all member agencies, and again, there's probably 150 agencies in Paderma, they were going to return 10% of member contributions to us. So that's what that represents. It's an actual check from Paderma reducing the expense for the year for our general liability property insurances to Paderma.
Because they're paying out less because less people are in the building, less people are driving, less people are doing A, B, or C.
Correct. Kind of like the Allstate giving back a percentage of premium on car insurance these days.
Okay. Good question. Okay, so are there any more questions for Carol? Alrighty, then we'll move to staff reports. Lisa and the rest of the A team will present the executive summary for COVID-19 impact.
Great, so we're gonna start out our staff reports by doing a little PowerPoint of, hopefully, can you guys see this? Not yet? No? Okay, let me try this again. Technology. Love technology. Hold on a second. We'll try to find it.
You want me to launch it, Lisa?
Yeah, could you? I don't know why it's not doing mine. Okay, there we go. Can we put in a slideshow?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So, we decided to do an executive summary just to show the board and any residents watching, or and actually for his archiving. For future people to see everything that we have done during COVID-19 and the progress we have made and what's been happening, and then this will help us keep track of what's going to happen in the future. So just a little timeline. Since March 9th, the governor Pritzker issued a disaster proclamation. Staff is, we're actually already working on COVID-19 issues probably 3 to 4 weeks before this. He declared the proclamation. March 12th and 13th, we held question and answer meetings with all staff. So they were hearing different issues that were coming and the possibility of us having to close our building. We held those meetings that were very, very productive and very helpful to all the staff. March 13th, that was the last day of programs, last day of school. We closed down the facility. On the 14th, on March 20th, we launched our Park Ambassador Program at the beach and parks based on closures of playgrounds and other sports courts and social gathering issues we were having. March 21st, the stay-at-home order began. March 23rd, Parks team returned to full on-site work. Prior to that, we were having minimal staff come in and do garbage collections and such. Bill and I believe Tom were on site during that time to watch over our facilities. March 30th, we began virtual programming, the start of it, and we have since expanded greatly since then. March 31st, we had a stay-at-home order that was extended to April 30th, and then again, it was suspended to March 29th. May 4th, we started emergency child care for essential workers. May 16th, we opened Central and West Parks tennis courts with modification for single play and reservations. May 23rd, so this Saturday, we'll open Glencoe Beach with modification as first season pass holders. So Carol?
Sure. As you well know, the board had approved to continue to pay staff to provide the services that we felt were essential to the community. As of this May, we have 35 full-time staff, 71 part-time employees that were being paid. Obviously, starting with the beach opening and looking to open camps, the seasonal staff will come into play for us, but as part of doing that, the board ensured continued services, providing the clean and safety of our parks, the ability to offer pool and registration programs and special events, ability to offer and open the emergency child care to our community's essential workers, and also then opening the limited tennis court use this last weekend. We look to open the beach this weekend, and the boathouse did open in mid-May. So by doing that, we have prevented the layoff or furlough of these staff that are working, and have such also eliminated the cost to pay that unemployment, which we estimated to be about 52% based on the fact that we were reimbursable, or I should say our reimbursable employer. Financial impact, as we've discussed, has been discussed at all the board meetings since we did close back on March 13th. It's continually evolving and changing, and to kind of help in providing a summary to the board, there are basically now three scenarios based on the timing of reopening. One was to open June 1, one was to open July 1, and one scenario is to open September 1. In all those scenarios, the district, due to its strong financial position, will continue or projects to continue to have over the minimum fund balance guideline of 50%, while still also maintaining the ability to transfer the surplus funds from last year into our capital projects fund to do our master projects, our master plan projects. As a part of that analysis, we looked at the cost of paying unemployment versus the cost of continuing to pay staff through May 31st. We have analyzed potential budget reductions totaling over $400,000, and specifically in April and May, eliminating $60,000 of contractual landscape mowing and stone repairs throughout the district. We did table the pending $4.5 million bond issue for future capital until later discussions. We froze all merit salary increases for employees as of March 13th. We did, due to the attrition of two full-time staff who actually have resigned during the closure, these positions are now being frozen. And we also identified those essential projects in Fund 65, our main ongoing maintenance capital items, and also are taking advantage of a very positive bid climate in the midst of it to result in savings over our budgeted amounts.
So next we're going to talk about some safety practices. I'm going to turn that over to Chris Liner.
So in looking at how we could reopen the Park District, we looked to OSHA. They've developed this guideline here for low risk and medium risk positions, which we have both of. Typically, lower risk positions are positions that do not interact with the public, somebody cutting grass, somebody working in a back office individually. Medium risk positions, as defined by OSHA, are somebody who has interactions with the public, so someone like a cashier, front desk worker, a person who works at Starbucks, that type of a position. So we do have those medium risk positions, someone in Children's Circle. Both are low and medium risk. Staff members don't intend to come in contact intentionally with someone with COVID-19. So you move into the high and very high risks when you move into medical personnel, paramedics, doctors, nurses, people who intentionally intend to interact with individuals with COVID-19. So we use those OSHA safety practices to start to develop our procedures and PPE usage throughout the district. Next slide. So under safe and health, we have these safety practices. So these practices are the mitigations that we put in place to help keep our staff safe. So things like you'll see at the grocery store, the plastic screens over the cashiers, we will have those at the ticket center. And on the beach carts, those plexiglass screens will be there to help create a barrier between our team members and the public. In addition, we'll be issuing PPE to all of our staff, including face coverings, as well as face shields, depending on the positions. We'll continually be utilizing gloves for using cleaning products and sanitizers and things of that nature. So the other things that we're encouraging is obviously physical distancing and administrative controls, so redistributing responsibilities, you know, things like breaking the parks team up into two functional units so they don't all have to interact together in the same lunchroom, things of that nature. Thank you.
So we are also following all the CDC guidelines for administrators in park and recreation facilities. So I'm not going to go over the whole list, but we are constantly referring back to what the CDC recommends for our operation. We place these parks do's and don'ts signs throughout the district, right probably a week after it was mandated playgrounds were closed and sports courts were closed. They're very well received in a nice, non-threatening way of what we do, what you should do and not do in our parks. And they were very well received and put these on social media also. Restore Illinois, they published this, a public post to safely reopen our state, and they have listed different phases that the state will go through. We are currently in phase two. looking to move to phase three. It could be anywhere from 2 weeks to a month, depending on what the governor's office says. Do I go to the next slide, Bobby? This brings it down to what the phases mean to recreation. So phase two, right now we're in there. It's child care for essential workers only. We are, as everyone knows, utilizing at the Jacob Center. Outdoor recreation includes walking, hiking, biking permitted. Select state parks are open, and boating and fishing permitted. As you know, we opened our boating beach. Golf courses are open, and all this with IDEH approved safety guidance. There's less guidance given to some of the other amenities we have. So the Tennis Association came out with guidelines how to open tennis courts safely by doing just single play only, and different things you can do with tennis balls to help practice that safely. So we opened those. We opened two tennis courts right now in this phase. We're looking to move to recovery phase, which means that we can go to limited child care and summer programs with IDPH approved safety guidance. I know we talked about that, and we'll talk about a little bit more. And then outdoor recreation, obviously state parks, activities permitting groups of 10 or fewer with social distancing. We're still looking for more guidance on what that means for playgrounds, sports courts. And then obviously phase four is that we can go to have more summer programs, child care open with safety guidance and outdoor recreation allowed. We just want to show you what region we're in. We're in region number 10 on our map, so that includes like Waukegan, up to Evanston. Okay. Bobby?
Yep, so we canceled all in-person programs, special events, obviously through shelter in place with the abundance of caution, so including the 4th of July, movies on the green, active concerts, spring egg hunts. We did move to a virtual programming model very successfully. We've actually had so much interest from other park districts that the rec team or the managers actually presented to over 200 rec professionals in a presentation last week in partnership with Illinois Parks and Recreation Association. And Jess Stockel actually had so much interest in our emergency daycare that she presented to 30 preschool directors that same week. Everyone's actually looking to us for a lot of guidance because we're kind of leading the way, and we've been very successful in virtual program. We know a lot of it is temporary. Some of them may last longer term, but I'm very proud of the team of what they've done. It's been extraordinary. They really pivoted really quickly. From after spring break, they were able to continue with dance and theater to roll out those programs immediately. On the preschool side, we did really, really great job of it, keeping the kids engaged with weekly circle times and communications. And between preschool enrichment and virtual preschool, we did $100,000 worth of revenue since closure, which is pretty incredible, split between 50% with the enrichment, 50% with Children's Circle and ELC. The Kids Club staff has been doing a great job engaging all of the participants in that with weekly Zoom meetings, with fun games, fun interactions, with phone calls directly to all the families, checking in on them, giving them support, which has been really awesome for them. On the athletic side, we've had some really, really creative ways of doing programming with Pridojo being a really fun one where we've actually had a lot of new people trying a new activity because why not? And it worked really well through Zoom, but not an activity you would associate with virtual, but it worked really well. Our Game On Sports for Girls was very popular. Even our tennis had some enrollment for virtual tennis, which was amazing for not really having much interaction, but people were just looking for great activities with great instructors, and we're lucky to have them. Something that has evolved through this whole process has been the development of esports, something we'll continue to evaluate as we go through it. We've had some tournaments with our Madden tournaments, with our basketball tournaments, e-tournaments, and then we have our Minecraft, which was well-received, and we're doing a second one next week. Our virtual ceramics or our model magic was really well received. We had 40 enrollments in each of those sessions. We had people racing to get into those when we announced that we were having them. We actually had wait lists. our adult participants in ceramics and art have really enjoyed those activities. And we see those maybe lasting a little bit longer than some of our other virtual options due to people really enjoy that interaction with their instructors and their college friends and members of the community. Adam and his team have done a great job reaching out to all our fitness members, engaging them 3 times a week. We've had virtual fitness classes. We've had okay enrollments. You know, you're competing against a lot of free offerings. But our goal wasn't really a money maker at all. It really was just to engage and to reach out to our community and to make sure people got to see their instructors and really, again, engagement with the community. So that was fun to see that happening. And then our dance and theater programs have been so well received. I would say I get 5 to 10 emails a week from participants, parents, saying how it's the one activity that their kids look forward to the whole week. And they're doing all sorts of really innovative shows, recordings, something I would never have guessed 3 months ago if you told me it was going to happen. So really awesome to see the team rally around and make those happen. You may have seen the link in the board report to our virtual brochure. It was over 60 classes offered, excluding some of our preschool offerings. So I don't know any other district that has offered that much, especially given our size. And a lot of those classes were running. We also proudly partnered with a lot of our neighboring park districts. They had a lot of questions, so they also have resources that we don't, from nature centers to other community members that we combined in classes. Make sure instead of a class running with two, we were running it with 6 or 8. We also developed really strong partnerships with people we'd never talked to, but this closure has actually introduced to us a lot of other professionals that we could rely on those relationships going forward and potentially partner for the use of, say, their, you know, Highland Park, their nature center, and other types of programming that we aren't currently able to offer the community. With virtual special events, we've done a lot. We replaced the spring egg hunt with FaceTime with the bunny. We did some virtual postings for Earth Day. We did our Minecraft competition. We did the partnership with the Friends of the Green Bay Trail for that awesome scavenger hunt. I was in one Saturday checking on the beach, and I saw a lot of the families out actually looking for some of those objects. We are doing the homes, the game nights with home scavenger, trivia, Pictionary, things like that. If you haven't already, please stop by Take It this weekend to drop off your pennies. We're doing a pennies war, raising money for the food pantry. Very well received on Saturday this weekend, Sunday not so much with cold weather. It is worth noting, read the instructions, because you have to know how to, with penny wars, the silver coins are actually a negative. So if you want to reduce the school's score, you want to put the silver coins in their buckets and put the pennies in Take a PLC, GJK, Joe's Circle bucket. So make sure you check those rules out.
And that's a really fun thing. My kids aren't hearing that because I did it wrong.
This sounds like some like Irish government funding system.
Hey, that is a very good comparison. We've had a stay-at-home 5K, which is ongoing. We've created a couple of create sips, so similar to our sculpts and sips, but virtually. So you can have a couple of beverages at home while working on your masterpiece, whatever that might be. We have that sequel to Minecraft, and we've done virtual birthday parties, and we got a really nice email from somebody this weekend who just had one, who said that all the feedback he had received from the kids was so great, he just wanted to share that along. So that was really, those emails really mean a lot to our staff when they get them. As we talked about last week, we're continuing to evolve our summer care options. As you know, we're in a phase 2 right now. We are having some people reach out to enroll in that phase 2. We have had 5 additional kids reach out for starting June 1. We are above 10 in the program right now. But we continue to grow that in a phase 2 until we get to the phase 3. As we've gone through the scenario planning and talking about our staff planning and staffing plans, it's become pretty apparent that any thought of rolling out a phase 3 camp in June was probably not practical. It wouldn't give us enough time to develop the program that we're comfortable with, especially with all the licensing requirements and just the unknowns right now. So we are going to recommend putting a phase three starting in July 6th for a more open unlicensed camp, which would be very similar to a phase two. We are still looking for guidance from Pederma, from the state on the number of participants, whether it's 10 participants or 10 total. And we're still looking for a couple other pieces of guidance, too, because there's some different opinions from DCFS through the IDPH, the state. So we are continuing to look at our staffing plan. As you may have seen, we sent an email out to the community on Friday saying we will communicate by Wednesday. So we're continuing to work on that plan, and we plan to send that out tomorrow evening at the latest of what our game plan is for camp, our limited restructured summer care option. And then we are also continuing to plan if we do get to a phase four. Right now we plan through the end of July, and we may look to continue a phase three into August, or we may look to do a more normal camp than with a normal, more traditional to what we've done in the past, depending on what phase we are in. The aquatics guidelines, I guess I'll steal it from you, Lisa. We're going to follow all the IDPH standards, CDC guidelines, the USA swim guidelines, the Restore Illinois plan, and all the other, from all the other local, state, national beaches. We're in constant communication with them. I know they're starting to develop their plans around what we've been talking about. The beach, we are, as you know, as we had the conversation a couple of weeks ago, determined that the board determined that the beach would open for season pass holders only. This was due to that a lot of other aquatic facilities and swimming pools would be closed. I talked to Pederma yesterday. They've had 22 out of their 80 swimming facilities already closed for the season, and they expect that to expand this week. We felt due to these closures and due to what some of the other beaches are doing that we would see a surge in non-traditional, non-residents attending our beach, and it may make it very difficult for us to enforce social distancing issues and potential swimming issues with no lifeguards and a capacity issue. So as you know, we're offering passes available to residents and non-residents alike, and those passes really saw an increase this last week. We continue to expect that to be as the weather getting a little bit better this next couple of days. It's worth noting that scholarships are available for families who may be in economic hardships, and they are eligible to apply for them. And the board was okay with not having lifeguards if we were unable to make the determination that lifeguards would be safely trained and we'd be able to get them by the time that the governor's order is lifted. On the boating beach, again, we talked about that it's allowed under the current order for two individuals or less. We have made the operations modifications that we discussed. The boathouse did open successfully about a week and a half ago. The weather has been mixed. You will have noticed that every time you go down there, it feels like the beach got more and more beat up from the storms. They're just non-stop at this point. Staff are doing a great job trying to stay on top of it, but even today, as Commissioner Kobe sent us pictures, pretty relentless down there with the Northeasters right now. The waves are pretty intense. Staff is doing a great job and continue to work tirelessly to keep that facility going the way it is, but it is nonstop.
Okay, Park amenities. As you know, the governor's order issued all playgrounds closed, all sports courts, all athletic fields closed until whatever phase they announce they're open. We are enforcing that right now by our playgrounds. We put up, boards so they can't go down the slides. We're fencing off some of the areas. Picnic tables have been fenced off. Basketball courts is a contact sport. You know, some may use it as individual shooting. It's more likely to be used as pickup games and such. So that remains closed. We have opened tennis. We opened that on Saturday. We have taken precautions that put signs up on the tennis courts that single play only. We've taken down nets between courts. We've taken reservations. It is to note that we had a lot of reservations. We also had a lot of no-shows come for our reservations, so people are booking those times and not showing up.
The rain doesn't help that.
No, the rain didn't, but we also had some on Saturday, too. So it's not just the rain day. Obviously, the rain day affects that greatly. But we are looking towards our neighboring communities, most of them, I think the exception is Northbrook, not open their tennis courts. So we're finding that most of the communities around us are open their tennis courts. So by June 1st, we're looking to open the other tennis courts up, no longer take reservations, and just put the signage up that we have on the current courts about social distancing and single play only and such like that by June 1st. Other than that, we'll keep on monitoring what the governor orders are on our other amenities. So any questions or comments?
I think, Lisa, I think it's important to note, it's been in the news a lot with playgrounds and park amenities about municipalities fighting back against the governor's orders and things like that. It's important to note that any item that has been specifically called out in the governor's order, if you knowingly violate that order, you void your liability insurance. So if we decided next week that we wanted to open playgrounds in violation of the governor's order, those playgrounds would no longer be insured by the government. So that's just something that's important to know, because that's been in the news quite a bit.
Very important note. We did want to have a little conversation about our season passes for the beach. To date, how many we have sold, Bobby?
1,985 passes.
So, and how many are resident and non-residents?
So 76% are currently residents. So that's a lot, which is great, because last year was 71% total were residents, so that is up. So we have about 1,508 resident pass sales as of about an hour ago. We have 477 non-resident pass sales, mostly from Northbrook, Glenview, some of those surrounding areas.
Bobby, how do those numbers compare with last year or previous years?
Great question. So last year we had 1,531 pass sales total. We're already, a third above that. So we had 1,089 resident pass sales last year, and we're already at 1,508. So we're not even on opening day yet. So we expect a surge by opening day.
So our question to you is, is the board more comfortable with limiting the number of season passes we sell, or have pass holders wait in line, or whether wait in the park or whatever mechanism we decide? That would be similar to a pool, very common for aquatic centers to have lines on really busy days. Which scenario would the board prefer, so we can go continue to plan? So either limit the season passes, and I'm not saying that would never be waiting, possibly waiting, there still may be some waiting with that, or say we're going to sell as many season passes as we can, and we'll just, if people wait, they wait.
It's scary if we get to like 5,000 passes. That would be a scary proposition.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought from the beginning that we were going to limit the amount sold. The problem is you're going to make that announcement and there's going to be a surge, and who knows what we get to. And we already said early bird goes till June 1st, so that kind of puts us in a not great position. But I would be in favor of limiting it, because the total number scares me a little bit.
Dudley?
Question.
Yes,
Dudley? How many people can the beach support and still meet the distancing requirements?
So based on the calculations we talked about in the last meeting, there's 65,000 usable square feet on the beach. Taking the spray ground out and the pier, well, the pier wasn't in that anyway, spray ground and the playground and other kind of oddities and some of the water levels, we've divided that in half. So we think that there's probably 35,000 usable square feet. And if you gave everybody 100 square feet a person, that gives you 300 to 325 people at once.
Yikes.
What we have seen in the past, but this may not be a reflection this year, is residents and pass holders tend to come to the beach for anywhere from 30 minutes to 90 minutes. They tend not to stay 4 to 5 hours. So that may change this year, but the tendency of pass holders is to do shorter stints rather than then the daily pass, the daily admissions tend to come earlier, pay their daily, and stay the full day.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah, because they're not worried about getting their money's worth. You're just coming for the time you want and moving.
Correct.
Yeah. Another question. Could we coordinate or have you coordinated with the fire department and for emergency access, those kinds of things?
Pardon
you know,
me?
Like the rooms have a maximum capacity, and so the analogy I'm bringing is the beach has the practical capacity, not only for spacing, but we need to reserve room for access for emergency services, you know, those kinds of things.
Well, we're going to go lower than the fire capacity, and for emergency personnel, they come down and there's that parking lot right there, and that's where they would pull in the vehicle and load anybody, so that is not an issue. So we're actually going way down below capacity at the beach to allow for social distancing.
Good. Okay.
When we had that really hot Memorial Day weekend a few years ago, I think I remember there was like, was there like 1,200 people that showed up or something? Is that correct?
1,400.
Throughout the day, though, right, Bobby?
Throughout the day, yeah, correct. So between 10 and 8.
And how many would you say, how many in your, not, you don't have the exact figure in front of you, but how many would you say at any given time were there at one time?
Six to 800, definitely. It was packed pretty much the whole day.
And then I kind of give you a reference.
Sorry. This goes back to the communications and kind of like what I was worried about in that letter of people thinking that just because you have a pass, you get in, you know, and we did say there's a limit, but if you show up and obviously we don't want a line, that defeats the purpose of social distancing, that's going to create an issue with neighbors, with parking, with other things, with public safety. So, I don't know. To me, I would limit it at it's just, it's too scary to think that we could sell. I mean, what if we sell 6,000 passes?
Can I offer a suggestion? Stephanie, you brought up a really good point, and that's the June 1 deadline, which is the only deadline date-wise we've incorporated into this whole scheme. Can we revisit it on or around June 1 to see if it has, to see what the, how many passes we've sold at that point, and reassess and say, okay, now we're at, because we don't have a number in mind. We're not saying we can't sell more than 2,500. We're sort of wild guessing. But I think if we have a number near the, then I think it would be easier, more palatable to people if we say that deadline has passed. We've had so many. We're going to close down in 2 days or something like that. And then people, because people have had their chance and they've been messaged, and my PSA hasn't even gone out yet. So. You know, they've had an opportunity, they've heard it lots of places, and at June 1 we reassess and kind of make a decision at that point.
I think we have to be more proactive than that. I think we have to have a game plan. I like the idea of June 1st. We are prepared to do out a put out email, and it would go out through the library, the village, school district. So mechanisms that would just go to our residents and say, you know, season passes are limited, buy your season passes before you miss out. It'll be said very nicely, and we'll share that with you.
Do you want me to share that, Natalie?
Yeah, could you pull that up?
Yep.
So kind of a message like, buy your season passes because we're going to limit them soon. This is kind of what it looks like. And we're going to change it to celebrate summer with a trip to Glencoe Beach. Lake Michigan's most beautiful spot on the North Shore. The beach will be open Saturday. And then due to the incredible sport, we expect to sell out of season passes this summer. Spread the word with your Glencoe friends and neighbors to get passes now, as they are limited. Daily admissions to the beach will not be available. Early bird rates are available through June 1st. So that's what we as an idea to send out to residents at this time.
Good.
Sorry, that I a few thoughts, and one of them is specifically on this note. If there is any desire, and I'm not saying there is, if there's any desire to curtail, you know, mass sales of it, this is maybe not the message you want to give out about how wonderful our beach is, buy your passes now, right?
isn't it more along the lines of, you know, very factual instead of a marketing thing about, you know, how wonderful Glencoe Beach is, but more factual, like, you know, the beach passes are on sale until June 1st, period. Because you may not want to incentivize people to buy passes, right? Like, you guys are saying one thing, but you're actually doing another. So I'm confused as to what the goal of this letter is.
That's true.
I think the goal of our the message is to make sure we communicate with as many residents that this is what the plan for the summer is. We want to make sure that we haven't missed anybody, so that's why going through the databases with the other local units of government in Glencoe.
I mean, Bobby, don't get me wrong. You want to make sure that if you sell 500 more passes, you sell to 495 residents.
Exactly.
Right. But that's not what the issue is here. The issue is, I actually am just going to ask some questions and kind of bow out of this conversation here. The message that you guys are telling me, Lisa, is that we have to make an option. Are we going to have a line, or are we going to sell out? Which means to me we've got too much demand. And then you're sending out a note to people saying, Glencoe Beach is gorgeous, it's beautiful, it's Memorial Day, it's great, come buy a pass. Shouldn't the message be, you know, we expect to sell out of season passes, buy yours now, period?
So pretty much take out that first paragraph is what you're saying.
I wouldn't tout how wonderful our beach is to get people to buy more passes if you guys want to curtail sales, is my point. Like the messaging, it's a mixed message in my opinion.
Maybe on that note, we also add, like, as a reminder, the water is closed unless its state mandate allows it to open, so that people know what they're buying. I've still gotten a lot of questions about the water this week. Every day, I get at least 5 texts about the water. So this is just my opinion, is maybe just clarify that.
I get some of those same questions. Good. You know, can we go swimming? Yes.
Yeah, I think everyone gets those questions. And I mean, actually, it's very odd to me that 4 people can sit on a beach close together, but 4 people can't go on a sailboat who are in the same family. So I hear that from people. I know it's not us that's doing it. It's more the governor's orders. But people are very frustrated by what seems to be conflicting policies. But I'm going to go back to your question, Lisa, and I'm going to pose a question in response.
Okay.
Why can't we be really bureaucratic and force reservations like we're doing with the tennis courts? You have a season pass, you can reserve a 2-hour spot, and when those 2-hour spots are sold out, tough. Now,
I'm sorry, Michael, because we didn't give that as a condition when we sold the passes.
Right, but now you're going to make them wait in line, so...
Maybe.
Right, so if that's the case, Lisa Brooks, if you were worried about the conditions that we sold the passes on, then you only have one option, which is to limit the passes.
I agree.
Also clarify that in the letter and say about the water restriction and, again, reiterate that capacity per day will be limited.
You know, we have
a concern, this has been my concern all along, I mentioned before, not specifying that capacity is limited. So just because you have a season pass doesn't mean you're going to get in that day. I think
we did say that in the letter, though. We said capacity will be limited.
Yep.
Yeah. We did say that. We didn't say how we would do it. I think the dilemma we have now is we really are motivated to sell as many passes as possible to a variety of reasons, you know, to get as many Glencoe people on the beach and to generate some revenue to support what we're going to have to do to keep this beach going. On the other hand, we have a limitation, but the limitation is an unknown because we don't really know the ratio of number of passes sold to number of people we can expect on a busy day. So we don't have a number in mind, so we're kind of, that I think is like the piece that's missing here. If we had a number in mind, maybe as we approach that, our messaging changes.
Yeah, Bobby, I like the idea of a number in mind, but, you know, is there, if Pat, and I like using past data points, although granted, COVID-19 screws everything up with data. But if people really do spend between 30 and 90 minutes, I know when I go to the beach as a season pass holder, I tend to spend about an hour down there. Is there a way that we can have our cake and eat it too, which is, you know, have different color wristbands or something on? Like if you show up at 8 o'clock, you get a blue wristband, and then you have to leave by 10 o'clock or something like that to kind of force the people out. And then, you know, I don't mind having a line, but I don't want people to be online. I personally don't mind the line. I think if people want to wait in line 6 feet apart, that is their problem. But I think it's the waiting online and not knowing when you're going to get in, which is kind of tough. I don't think we're going to have all the magic answers here. This is what I was asking for, you know, 2 weeks ago, is let's be creative here, guys, girls, women, men. What can we do? Because we're going to have a demand problem, and we haven't solved it yet.
Well, yeah, we definitely have ideas. We talked about the reservation. We talked about the bands. What we're asking you right now is, which scenario are you comfortable? Because at pools, aquatic centers sell passes all the time, and they don't say, hey, you might have to wait outside. It's just known if they reach capacity, you might have to wait to get in. And we have a system we're developing already about what to do, so people would have to go wait in the park, and then they would call. We'd call them when it's their time to come in. We have that all set, but it's the capacity of how much you want people to wait. So regardless, if we sell 500 passes, there's probability, you know, very little that people might have to wait. How much do you want people to wait? How angry do you think residents would be versus us telling residents that there's no more season passes available versus us telling residents we may have to wait in line? And we're just planning. This may never come to fruition. Maybe people's appetite to go to the beach may not be there because there is no swimming or they're worried about COVID. Maybe it'll stop at 2,500 and we won't have an issue. We're just trying to be proactive and plan. And so if you say, hey, I have no problem with people waiting in line, then maybe we do go to the point where we look at reservation systems. We're just trying to figure out the...
Can I add a few things? I've been listening for a while. I think there's three questions here. One is, what is a reasonable number of passes to sell? And I don't think it's reasonable for us to ask Lisa or Bobby that question like right now, but I think it is a reasonable question to say, based on historical data, our best estimate is that it would be unwise to sell more than X passes because we would almost certainly result in too much demand on certain days, right? There's going to be some judgment involved in picking that number, but clearly it's not 15,000, right? But it's not 500 either. So I think we need to have that number in mind. So we make sure that we just don't sell more than that. Second, we have an obligation because of the state money that we took not to, I'm not actually precisely sure what the precise limitation is on what we can and can't do for residents, but we have offered the pass sales to non-residents now. Would it, for example, be acceptable to say, we're only offering them to residents from now on, right? And finally, I liked the idea of, I sort of like the idea of reservations, and I'd like to suggest a modification, which is, even though we have not said that, we have not until now said that reservations would be required, I could imagine an email going out to all of the pass holders the Thursday before a weekend when we know it's going to be 90 degrees and sunny and say, we suspect that demand will be extra high. And if you want to ensure, you know, email this person or do this to reserve a spot that will ensure that you get in. right? Everybody else that has a season pass will be let in if space allows, and if not, they'll have to wait. That's all I have to say.
I mean, those are all really good points. If you ask us, and no one's asked us, but Josh kind of did phrase, what do you think would be a proper number of season passes? If we normally sell 1,500, staff internally says, with the capacity limitations and the water levels where they are now, we would be comfortable with selling 3,000 and then readjusting as the summer goes on. So starting at 3,000, and if it gets, you watch the water levels, watch the demand level, watch how everybody's coming, and look at it from there. And then if we are able to sell more, if we're comfortable, then maybe come back to the board and say, at this time we're interested in maybe opening up to more assets. So that's the number we were talking internally, 3,000, that's double of what we sold last time. Non-resident rates, we are tied with Oslag Grant that we have to always, if we offer resident rates, you have to offer non-resident rates at all times. We can't say, okay, we offered resident rates for 3 weeks and now that's it, we're done with non-residents. It says you have to be equal at all times with non-residents because the Oslag Grant we have taken and it's public.
I thought it was 2x.
Pardon me?
I thought it was up to 2x, not equal.
I mean time-wise. So we
We don't charge 2x right now to non-residents. We charge about 1.5x.
What are we at now?
It's not quite double. It's, I think, 212 versus 121 for a family of four. So
we could raise it to double if we wanted to at the June 1st deadline. So
yeah.
You could say we're raising it up. You know, I think that wouldn't make the biggest difference if people paying it or not.
Well, so if we don't sell those 3,000, suppose we only sell 2,300, and someone walks up to the beach and wants to get in for a day pass, will we sell them a season pass then on the spot?
No, we're going to do it where it's you have to buy a season because we don't want the exposure to our staff. So you have to buy it online. What we can do, for example, we do get, say it's July, we have a lot of people coming, we can require people to buy their passes and they won't get them for 24 hours.
Yeah, 24 hours.
That would probably delay like the non-residents coming or and buying them that day and selling more non-resident passes. That way we can legally do that. We can't.
I think you should do that right now.
Okay. I agree.
Don't just say online because you'll have people deciding to wait till the last minute and then try and buy it on their phone.
Right. That's what I think we should do.
It doesn't say in the language that 24 hours in advance.
Yeah, it's 24 hours. So people can't come that day and buy it. So that's good. We made that change already. So we cannot take away the non-residents. We've looked at every...
And plenty of people have asked me as well, and I tell Lisa Brooks every time someone asks me, I give her the same thing. I pretty much say it is not up to the park district. It's essentially and effectively a law that we have to abide by since we took the Oslag grant. People understand that when we explain it.
Pretty much, yeah. They do.
It's for what it is, it's a law. I have heard people ask about the parking. Do we just close the parking down? Who owns that law? Is that our law or is it the village?
Village.
It's street parking, right? It's street parking that's owned by the village, right, Chris?
Owned by the village,
yes.
But they have always abided by our Oslag grant as a means.
I'm not talking about for residents only or non-residents. I was talking about, is it open at all?
Well, they're recommending that we open those lots. Everybody is, because all that happens is the people park in the by the neighbors. So right now we have all the lots closed. Correct? I get so many complaints from the neighbors, like, open those lots back up. People are just parking on the street in front of their house, which is, they're getting a lot of complaints about that.
Yeah, I saw that all the streets around it were and I had asked that same question, too, because I thought that could be a good way to deter people from coming, but you're right. They're going to find a place to park, and it's going to...
They're doing it now. So by this weekend, we're opening the lots back up. And we have the big signs that are going up that say season pass hold only. allow the beach. We're going to put more as they come driving up, so hopefully before they even get there, they'll see those signs. So we're going to do all that marketing. We've actually talked about reservations. I know there's a couple of the park districts, if they open the pool, they're going to do a reservation system. We can look into that for those really busy days and see if that's feasible. So that's something that we have floated around, too, to do that.
I will say the problem with that is what happened with the tennis courts. People will reserve and not go. I think that's basically our message. I mean, personally, I'd do it. I'd sign on and then, you know, go or not go. I think it could be an administrative nightmare for you folks. Terrible. Scanning who's
yeah,
on.
I would definitely say yes. I mean, once the time's up, then you're going to go try and find them on in between. How do you find
them? And I'm angry that I can't get on because I'm too late, you know.
It might simply have the intended effect, though, to email people as I suggested and say, if you don't, you know, we're worried about lines. We will shut it down when we reach capacity. So we suggest that you come very early or very late in the day, or
just be prepared.
Be prepared.
Yes, that I like is sort of a warning. That I think just a friendly kind of thing to do. Yeah,
I mean,
yeah. Before it happens.
It reminds me of when you go to a restaurant and you're waiting for a table and there's five open tables.
Yeah.
You know, when you're looking over and you're like, well, why can't I sit there? Well, that's the church. And it's like, well, come on, here.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's a great analogy for that. Yeah. But that could happen. It happened with tennis. Now, granted, one of the days is rainy, but the nice day we had people.
Okay, so to kind of sum up, it sounds like we're all in favor of reaching what I now understand, did not before, is a 3,000 or thereabouts limit on passes, which we may never reach, and that we're not going to be aware of how the count is increasing, so you staff will have to be watching that. And if you're starting to approach something that feels really frightening, close to 3,000, we're going to have to move. All of our messaging is going to have to include this sort of, well, not a sort of, a message that we are going to, that we will need to limit pass sales.
Well, actually, we're going to do that right away. We're going to, and I take note of what Michael said about our message that we'll not make it so Pollyanna. We'll just say, buy your beach passes now. Limit. We're going to limit details. And just clarification, there's no lifeguards on duty. There's no water restrictions. Capacity may be listed. We'll list all those because the questions we're reading, and we're also developing a question and answer on our webpage.
Good.
Of all the questions people are asking. We tell people, honestly, if they say, well, if I can't buy a pass and I can never get on the beach, do I get a refund? No, you don't. You buy it, you don't get a refund. There's no refund on beach passes because we don't know if they bought it and then just decided to never go, and that's why they're asking for it. So we're not going to give a refund regardless if you buy a beach pass, and we told people that. The only way we would do it is if the governor closed down our facility for some reason. And then we would fully get passed, because obviously we're opening on Saturday. So if there's, say, July 1st, and the governor says, you have to close your facility, that would mean he would close all state parks, which I don't see happening again. But then we would prorate it for the next 2 months. We divide out the days and prorate it for that. But that's the only reason we would give refunds.
Okay, and just to kind of add a couple of facts here, we're going to be messaging to our Glencoe resident databases from now on, not doing any crossover to larger databases or larger platforms like Nextdoor, et cetera.
Correct. We're going to stay off of social media.
And we'll
Yeah.
Something, I missed something in this sort of sum up here.
That's good.
Okay, so we'll rely on you staff to be monitoring this, and should it come to the point where you need to act, I guess you know what our position is, and you know, let us know.
Okay.
Are we?
I am.
Lisa Brooks, are we recommending that, you know, the odds of us getting to 3,000 by June 1 are sound like they're slim, but are we recommending that we stop at 3,000 or no?
I would not say slim at all.
If staff and Lisa are asking us for direction, I think we owe them something, and we could say, you know, we could say that we put a temporary hold on sales at 3,000 to revisit it, and we may sell more later on in the summer. I don't know, but I feel like you're we're kind of kicking the can down the road, which isn't really the most fair thing to do. Otherwise, we're saying a line is acceptable.
Okay, so I didn't intend for that. What my intention was, as you see it approaching 3,000, you act.
So we're reaching the limit, and
then send out the message that we've reached the limit.
Okay, so
in this week, you've sold how many just in 1 week?
We sold 200 since yesterday. So we sold well, you know, we probably sold 1,500 in the last week and a half.
And just a reminder, when the weather gets nice,
oh, yeah,
everybody buys it. So the weather is supposed to be nicer these next coming days.
Okay, Lisa, what do you need from us?
Yeah.
What do you need from us to know exactly what you can do?
Well, that you are all in agreement that 3,000, we're going to limit hat sales at 3,000. Knowing that there might be some angry residents that call and say, I want to buy a season pass, and, you know, that's just...
You can do that unless you send that email out tomorrow.
Well, that is our plan. The email will go out on our database tomorrow. We'll go to the villages on Friday. School district on Monday. We're going to ask the library to do it.
Hold on, Stephanie.
And we did say limited. We did say we're going to. There was limited, I believe, in our email. So
yeah, we did.
We played.
What I would say is traditionally non-residents buy their passes at the beach.
Yeah.
So they don't do it ahead of time. They turn up. They see the price of the daily. And they say, well, we plan on coming, so they'll sign up.
Yeah, I'm not worried about non-residents.
That's what we aren't either. We're just trying to push it to residents. So
we're at 17% of all Glencoe residents currently have a pass.
17, you said?
Can you get this out for a second? Because I don't think the long game here works. If you are saying that we're sending out an email tomorrow, which I don't mind us doing, because you're afraid that we're going to get some people... What happens if we send the email tomorrow and 1,600 people in the next 24 hours want to do this? You're over 3,000. So we need a clear direction, I think, for staff that has asked, what do we do? Because sending out the email and not capping it is very different than sending out the email and capping it. So
I didn't even think that was under discussion. I thought what was under discussion is the cap is 3,000. When we get 3,000, we're done.
So Stephanie Boron, you're okay. I'm fine with it. Send the email out, cap it at 3,000.
I'm okay as long as there's fair warnings to residents, because I don't think there is at the moment. So you need to be extremely clear in that email that pass sales are limited. You don't have to put the number, but they need to know that they will sell out, because it's not fair. Everyone should have the same chance.
Well, they have, because we told them to buy their season passes in our first letter, so everybody's had a chance to buy a pass, and now they'll get another chance
to know that it's limited, because I still don't think that's, you could put a line in an email that's a page long, but if you have a little email and you say it's limited, people will get it, they read it, they have a fair chance.
So it's only a tiny paragraph. We're getting rid of the kumbaya stuff. It's going to be a little more, but it'll be pretty, so it'll look friendly, and that's important, but it'll be more to the point, factual and to the point, including this, they will be, passes are selling quickly and they will be limited. Yes. Right? Right.
And the no water access.
And the no water access, yeah. At this time.
And trade playground for you, because people don't seem to understand that's the same thing as water.
What was that? Did you say?
The spray playground.
Oh, okay.
So they don't understand that's the same thing.
So they don't understand that playgrounds are closed. If they're closed up top, they're not closed down. So that's interesting. Okay.
Playground.
Okay.
People don't understand a lot of things, but they really...
That's a good point.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
So maybe swing it past us before you could send it out to make sure everybody's good with it.
I would have to have it turn around really fast, though. So,
okay.
I did make
it not have to get past me. I feel like all of our comments have been, at least for me.
Great. Okay.
I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good.
Good. Stephanie, good. Okay. Very good. Then we will. You're done. Am I right with your report?
Yes.
Okay.
That was it.
Thank you for that direction. That was good discussion.
Okay, I understand. And I'm sorry, everything's very fast, so it's good to know all this. As far as the season, the other department reports, we kind of summed it up in our PowerPoint. Do you have any questions on the rest of our reports? Just all I have to do is thank the staff and thank the board for the phenomenal job they're doing. Everything changes almost daily, and everybody's been really nimble and able to turn on a dime. And it's why it's frustrating, because things do change and it's not as planned out as we would like. So we appreciate your patience, and I appreciate the staff ability to keep on working under these weird conditions. So. Any other questions from our reports?
No.
Okay. With that said, I want to go into, it's in your packet, to talk about the trail project, to give you an update on the Glencoe Trail project and Duke Park project. So I'm going to throw that to Chris to talk about that.
Okay, I'm just going to share my screen here.
Thank you.
Okay, so can everyone see it?
Yeah.
Yes.
So for what Lisa said, I'm just going to give a quick update on the trail project. So where we're at with the trail is, per the IDOT bidding schedule, we're scheduled to open the bid for the trail July 12, 2020. In a previous meeting, the board gave Lisa Shepherd prior approval by vote to sign the local public agreement, which basically is the document that commits the Park District to paying for their portion of the trail to the state of Illinois. So we just received that agreement, and with everything that's going on, we thought it would circle back to the board and just have a quick dialogue about the project to make sure that there's a consensus here. So first off, we have the actual funds expensed on the trail to date. So this basically gets us to today right now. Over the course of three fiscal years, it's about $250,000. Beyond that, we have had some good news from CBEL. They are estimating that the trail is going to come in lower than originally budgeted. So we'd originally budgeted the construction around $1.2 million, and they're now conservatively estimating to be $900,000 and a little bit over $1 million, which includes the 15% contingency. So we are in a very unique bidding climate right now. We are seeing projects come back at bottom dollar prices. Companies are looking to keep their staff off unemployment. So that's been a very interesting factor in this process. Below in this chart, you'll see the estimated costs remaining to construct the trail. So we have the construction, a little over $1 million, the professional service costs of about $150,000. And then you'll see the CMAP grant and the IDNR trail grant. Now, the CMAP grant is money that the state will pay directly out on our behalf. So that's not money that we'll have to wait on through the state. At this point, we have had no indications, formal or informal, of any suspension of these state programs, which we'll talk a little bit more about later. But you can see that the total cost to complete the trail to the park district at this point for the construction phase is approximately $330,000 after the grants are received. So we looked at the total cash position of $169,000. We would not anticipate starting the trail project until after the scheduled $1.5 million transfer in July. And Kira, we are still on track to make that transfer, correct?
Correct. Just so kind of want to wait until the audit is done, but it's correct. It's from last year's surplus at audit time, so it has no impact on any future transfer.
So the estimated cost of the trail represents about 11.5% of our cash position, $169,000. So the projected balance of that account after the transfer is a little over $2.8 million, a little under $2.9. So this does not represent the sale of the Linden House as well. So is there any questions, any concerns that we want to discuss?
Does anybody have any questions on this? Is our intention to proceed forward with this project?
I've got a question. How long do you think it'll take to build the facility, and when do you think they might start it? I mean, are they actually going to be able to do it this fall?
Well, that's a good question, Commissioner Onderdon. It's likely CBEL has
estimated the project at 50 working days. That's the estimate for the completion, so that doesn't include rain days, weekends, holidays, things like that. It is possible that with the unique nature of the state shutdowns, we may see some material shortages, like what we're dealing with the halfway house, the factory that makes the tiles, which is currently open in Ohio. I don't anticipate that to drag the project on beyond this year. We're still planning for a fall start. And as you all know, municipal construction was exempted from the governor's stay-at-home order. So unless that dramatically changes, I don't anticipate construction not beginning this year. But we'll have more information on that once it's open.
So certainly waiting till July, so after the audit is complete, is not an issue.
Not at all. I can't imagine. I mean, because it's going to take probably 3 to 5 weeks for contracts. So, I mean, if they open that bid July 12th, I can't imagine a shovel in the ground before that transfer is made.
And there's a chance it'll get carried over till next year completely.
It's possible depending on the weather, depending on everything that's going on.
Okay.
Never say never.
Yeah.
Now when it comes to construction.
How confident do we feel like the, 867,500 are going to come to fruition? Has there ever been cases for the new guy on the board? Have there been cases where that funds have been pulled?
That's a good question, Michael. So the majority of those funds, the 667, are funds that the state pays directly. So the contractor will actually have to collect that from the state, not from us. So what we'll have to collect from the state is the $200,000 grant. When Governor Rauner took office 5 years ago, he suspended the Ozland project.
What's that? 5 years?
Yeah. Because his whole term. At that point, though, the local public agency agreements had not been signed.
Okay.
So once we have that LPA, it's basically a legal contract.
So you guys feel, obviously, the 667 we don't really care about because they're signing an agreement with the state. $200,000, you feel like we've got a pretty good legal case for it. If we don't get that $200,000, Carol, does this keep you up at night?
No.
Okay.
My thought, Michael, is that if there was a delay, we would get everybody who got delayed the last time got the money in there.
Yeah.
Nobody was left hanging.
Okay.
It might take a couple of years, but they got it.
Yeah. They got it, correct.
I guess one of the risks to the bidders is knowing that the state pays them. I mean, only speaking from personal work experience here, if you knew the state was going to pay you, you'd be like, ugh.
So that's a good add, Lisa. So the bidders on this project are all pre-approved state of Illinois bidders.
Okay.
So they're companies that work pretty much exclusively with the state, so they'll likely build the state bureaucracy into their price.
Got it. Yep. Okay, any other questions?
Okay, so we're good to move forward with that unless I hear any other things and otherwise. Okay.
Okay.
Josh?
Sorry. Yeah. As I have understood our previous committee meetings as well as primarily from committee meetings, but maybe it was an earlier full board meeting about the state of our finances. Even if the shutdown continues through September and we continue paying staff through September, maybe it was September 1st, we would be over 50% of our fund balances
in our operating fund.
In our operating fund. That's correct, Carol?
That is correct.
So even if things with COVID don't improve as quickly as we would like, we would still be over 50%. And the $1.5 million transfer that you talked about doesn't affect that.
Correct.
So it seems extremely unlikely that we would be in a position where a year or two from now we're deeply regretting pursuing this project because we desperately could have used the extra $300,000.
Correct.
Okay. And then it seems like a no-brainer, considering that the project's likely to be a couple hundred thousand dollars cheaper than we expected.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Okay, so Lisa, what's next?
Okay, Duke Park project update is next.
So Duke Park. So here you'll see where we're at with Duke Park is we're prepared to go out to bid for the project. We were prepared to go out to bid before the stay-at-home order, but the stay-at-home order delayed some of our contracts with OSLED. Previously, the board has given Lisa Shepherd the permission to sign the local public agency agreement, but it was delayed due to the pandemic shutting down the IDNR. We've now received that agreement. So we thought it would be a good opportunity to circle back with the board and update everyone on the project, just like the trail. So you can see the actual funds expensed on Duke Park to date, which is about $88,500. So that's master planning, design, construction, surveys, things of that nature. Below, you'll see the estimated costs remaining to construct Duke Park. So we have the construction budget of $940,000, additional design services of $40,000. Then the receipt of the private donation, of which $100,000 has already been received. And then we have the OSLED grant for $400,000. So what's nice about the OSLED grant is they will give you money up front. So upon execution of the LPA agreement, we would request $200,000 of our agreement from our agreement up front. That's basically your working money. So that's a good spot to be. Again, we've just put together a quick pros and cons list because this project does involve a little bit more cash outlay and we would not receive the $200,000 until the project was completed. So the maximum outlay of $481,700 represents 16.7% of the projected cash position of the $2.9 million in Fund 59. This does not include any installments of the future private donation. So that number of 16.7% takes into account that those future donations would not be involved. So again, this project would not start before that July transfer. So is there any particular questions about this? Anything we need to discuss?
Has anybody asked any questions on Duke Park or any concerns about continuing this project?
Well, when you see the grants, it's really nice to see those minus amounts. And
right, isn't it?
We've done a really good job of getting that, these grants and that donation obviously helped, and we're going to have two really exciting projects. So.
You got it.
It's good. I think it's really important when you talk to with residents, see this construction, and we'll message this also, but for commissioners, for you to message this, if people are asking, that the majority of these projects are funded through grants and donations. So, and now with the competitive bidding cycle that we believe we're going to be in, we'll get more bang for our buck. So it's really, really a good time to be building, and with these donations and construction grants, I see no downfall to this.
So Lisa, you and your staff could just get together a brief list of talking points so that we're all kind of have the same information available for any residents who might be surprised that we're doing capital projects. It's good to have, and it's good for the messaging to be consistent among all of us. So I know we could probably do fine on it, but that's just good to have.
Absolutely. We'll absolutely do that.
Okay.
I think that we're in a lucky position that this is something that that truly is more grant and donation funded. I think it's a rare position to be in this position at this point. So if it has to happen, this is the best time for it to happen. Yeah, and this isn't like it's a new project that we thought of during the pandemic. So we're like, hey, let's go build this. But I'm sure that there will be opinions that differ widely from that. So we should be prepared.
Exactly.
When would you expect the playground to be finished?
So it's hard to answer those questions. I would say the fall or of this year or the spring of next year, depending on when we get started. Again, the challenge here is material availability. I mean, we've been very specific in specing certain types of equipment, and we may be dealing with a valve that's made in a state that is currently under shutdown for 2 more months than us. So, again, it's hard to make promises until we have a construction contract signed and a timetable from the contractor, but I think that's definitely something we can come back and update the board on later.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just thinking about having to tape it off when it's open, and, you know, just because of COVID.
Oh, yeah, we thought of that, too.
Yeah, I mean, because it is possible that the splash apparatus won't be opening this year. We'll have to see.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Anything else on this? All right. Lisa, what's next?
Okay, we want to lose.
I guess it would be good to construct the playground when the playground is closed anyway.
Right. That's true. That's a good way to look at it. Yeah.
The next thing we want to talk to you about is action items. So we're going to go into a discussion first on these, and then we'll make a motion after we discuss. So there's been some, just late last week, some DCEO fast track grants that have become available for shovel-ready projects. So Chris has been investigating, and I want to note that these are, what you're authorizing me is to pursue and look into them further and make a choice whether we should go for them. Once we are finding out more information every day and every hour, really, on these, but we want authorization to go for it if we feel they're a good fit for the district. So, Chris, do you want to throw over to you?
Absolutely. So, Lisa's point, these grants are very, very difficult. These really, the best thing I can think of is really kind of the old-fashioned WPA-type projects. Basically, what the state of Illinois is doing is freeing up $25 million for a first-come, first-served grant program with a minimum grant amount of $500,000 with no required agency match. So that's a very, very unique situation. And what Lisa's point is, this isn't a grant cycle that has a meeting. It's first-come, first-served. Whoever gets the grants in who are qualified will get the money. So the caveat is you have to be able to break ground in 90 days. So what the governor is trying to do is prevent the end of the municipal construction season in 2020 due to COVID, to keep people working, keep people spending, and to assist municipalities that have been hit hard by loss of revenue due to COVID, something similar to what we're going through based on our 3 months closure. So we started to look at what could we possibly have that we lined up as a 90-day ready project. So the first thing that came to mind was Duke Park. So while we have the $400,000 OSLED grant for Duke Park, that doesn't necessarily mean that's the only grant we could pursue for that project. So like the trail, we pursued 3 grants for the trail and we got 2 of them. So what we've looked at is recommending pursuing a $750,000 grant for Duke Park. So the grant would likely preclude the OSLAD grant, but would net the district $350,000 more in grant money. So effectively, there is no risk to the Park District to pursue this grant. There is some more investigation that needs to be done on the pay schedule, because there is likely that they're going to have an accelerated program for this project. So we don't anticipate, if we apply for this grant and receive it, that it's going to stop construction this year. It would likely make the bidding process a little more complicated, but it's something that we absolutely need to look into just based on the accelerated speed that they're getting these grants and issuing them. The other project that we've looked at is compressing the multi-phase HVAC equipment replacement process that we've begun undertaking at the data center. As you recall, we're replacing the rooftop units on the gym this year for about $125,000, and we have somewhere between about $400,000 and $700,000 worth of HVAC equipment that's going to need to be replaced in the next 3 years. These pieces of equipment are truly like off-the-shelf order out of a catalog pieces of equipment. So we've looked at potentially putting in a grant application for $550,000 for the replacement of the HVAC equipment at the Take Center. That comes with the caveat that our mechanical service provider has indicated that they could start that project within 90 days of a grant award. So this particular area is one that we're still looking into, but as to what Lisa said, tonight we're looking for support from the board to continue to pursue these projects, or these grants, excuse me, knowing that the grant process is accelerated and it's a first-come, first-served.
Did we ever apply for the Watts grant?
We did.
That's a park grant, but you have to remember that it has to be shovel ready within 90 days.
Right.
So, but there may be, and I want to talk about that too, there may be opportunities for more of these grants come available. So I do want to talk about to the board about, do they have any appetite for us to examine how much it would cost to take the Watts grant to shovel ready position, or for that matter, the maintenance garage to shovel ready.
Yeah.
And just as a reminder, both of those projects did entail the issuance of a bond issue to help fund them. So
Lisa's point, it's highly likely that in an economic recovery, we're going to see some very grant opportunities for municipalities based on the fact that our projects are prevailing wage and they really put a lot of people forward. So
that's something we don't have to talk about tonight. That's something I may bring to the board at a committee meeting and say, this is how much it would cost to get these two projects to shovel ready. And like Carol said, they require bond issues. If they are matching or whatever, there's a possibility with the bond issues also with that. So that's something, if the board wants me to, we can start investigating and see how much that would cost to bring to the committee.
With this DCEO grant, the $25 million will be awarded by May 31st.
Oh, yeah, this one's gone. I meant for a future grant.
Yes.
Yeah, this one's gone. This one, there's no ability to put those projects in for this one. They're not shovel ready. They're not ready to go, so they're not going to be eligible
for this. Right. Is there any options to think about the things that we've been, going through that laundry list of items that we want to get done? Some are, Some are 10 years left the shelf life, 5 years left the shelf life, 20 years left the shelf life. But as I was thinking about things like this, there are probably a whole host of smaller things. I don't know if you could package them into one.
That's a great question, Michael. So the minimum grant award is $500,000, and they have to be like projects. So like if you were a community that was going to replace 40 stoplights, you could put that all in as one grant, but you can't package a ceramics kiln and a floor and a roof tile. It can't be, it's got to really be light work. Because I went right to, can we package the overlook project in with the playground and go for $1.2 million? And they were not thrilled with that idea.
Okay, well, it's good to know that you're involved. What I was actually thinking about, though, was baseball fields. Like, we've got the lights at Pickett that we keep talking about are expensive, and then the baseball field by West that we've just neglected. Those are two products that I, in my layman's, perspective here, you can probably get some of those shovel-ready in 90 days to sort of resurface, redo, drainage, things like that in the baseball field in West. I speaking sort of out of my comfort zone here, but are there other projects like that we could consider as well?
For this grant, no, because you have to have them shovel-ready right now. You have to have those plans done, community meetings done, things like that.
Okay,
so any project that requires a match from the district.
I thought shovel-ready in 90 days.
Yeah, what's that?
I thought you said shovel-ready within 90 days.
No, you have to break ground in 90 days.
Shovel-ready now. So you have to have plans now.
Yes. So just for comparison's sake, it costs about $100,000 to get the Berlin baseball field shovel-ready.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it took about a year. So I think that those projects are great projects in the future for the types of grants that Lisa's talking about, but we're going to have to make that long-term investment in developing those cost estimates and plans. But very good point.
I'd be more in favor of not applying it to Park and doing another one. I just feel like we already have that. It's going forward. I mean, doesn't it look bad to say, well, we're giving back a grant or no? I mean, to me, I think it looks bad, but I'm not involved in that work.
But we don't have any other shovel-ready projects.
Yeah.
So we would give up that grant for a larger grant.
I would imagine, Stephanie, under the current circumstances, there's going to be other districts giving up their OSLAD grants right now.
What?
Yeah.
And only because of the amount or because of the restrictions or what?
Because they don't have the match.
Yeah.
Okay, so this one, you don't have to match. Osland, we have to match.
Right.
The Osland, we're applying to Duke. We're not applying the Osland to the trail?
No, the trail is separate. The Osland is the playground.
Only the playground is $200,000.
It's $400,000.
The grant is $400,000?
Correct.
Right.
Okay, but this grant is $500,000.
This grant is $750,000.
Yeah.
Well, what happens if you don't spend it all?
Well, we'll
spend it.
Because that's the cost of it.
The project is estimated at about $1 million, so it's far under the estimate, even with an aggressive bid climate. As long as the award is over $500,000, you don't risk losing the grant. So if we said we went for a $500,000 grant, the project came in at $425,000, they would be unhappy. We would probably lose the grant.
Right. Yeah, we don't have any other project that we could go for this. So it's in Osland at this point. They would, if we were able to get the other grant for a full amount and we rejected the Osland, I don't think there's, because of the climate we're in, they're going to be more understanding why we're going for other funding also. Because things have changed so much. Last year, they would not have been forgiving. That would have hurt us for future Oslads. But for now, I don't think they would be very forgiving.
Well, for me, I think it's great to go after these fast-track things, so I'm supportive of that, and for that matter, I'm also supportive of moving forward to get... I struggle to know what the right terminology is, but I think that it's clear to me that the maintenance garage is in our future. And so we need to figure out how much that's going to cost and what exactly we want to do, because whether we do it next year or 4 years from now, it's happening soon.
Right. Dudley?
Yeah, I don't see any real downside for this. You know, first I was concerned that there were different, so many applications to the state. But then as I started to think about it, it's really many different divisions of the state, and I'm sure they don't really communicate all that well.
That's correct.
So, and there's no downside. It's mostly staff time,
mm-hmm.
and I know you guys are busy, but you're bringing it forward as a possibility. Let's go for it.
Well, and to that point, Dudley, the ECEO Fast Track grant is about 80% the same as the Osland grant.
Okay.
So we've been able to really take the hundreds of hours that Aaron and I put into that grant and reuse a lot of that work.
Terrific.
Okay. So for everything said so far, I agree. Dudley agrees. Michael, do you have anything to share?
Thumbs up.
Okay. Off we go. So, Lisa?
Recommended motion under items
are done. And, okay, I got it. Okay. The board will now enter into closed session. Oops, sorry.
Nope.
I entertain a motion.
No,
I'm trying to get going here. I entertain a motion to approve resolution number 913, approval of DCEO Fast Track Grant Resolution of Authorization for Takeoff Mechanicals as. No, sorry. I entertain a motion. I'm so sorry. I entertain a motion to approve resolution number 912, approval of DCEO Fast Track Grant Resolution of Authorization for Duke Park as presented.
So moved.
Any discussion? No? Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdunk?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Next.
I recommend motion for 913.
Okay, we're doing that too. Okay, I entertain a motion to approve resolution 913, approval of DCEO Fast Track Grant Resolution of Authorization for Take It of Mechanicals as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Mr. Underdunk?
Yes.
Mr. Ludden?
Yes.
Mr. Colby?
Yes.
Mr. Boren?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Other business, Lisa?
I have no other business at this time.
Okay. So I understand we are going to enter closed session. Is that correct?
Yes. I just have a little caveat before we go into executive session.
Bye.
We're gonna. Anybody who's on the call that wishes to stay until we resume back into their normal session will be put into the waiting room. And if you choose not to stay, then you can close out the session. But if you want to come back once we go into regular session after the next session, we'll bring you back in. Okay.
All righty. The board will now enter into closed session where no action will be taken. I entertain a motion that pursuant to Section 5 ILCS 120/2 of the Open Meetings Act, the board will enter closed session to discuss personnel and real estate as mandated by Section 2.06 5 ILCS 120/2 C1 and 6.
So moved.
Second. Okay, any discussion? I will also say that those present during executive session will include all commissioners, Lisa Shepherd, Carol Mensinger, Bobby Collins, and Chris Liner. So can you do the so moved again, please?
So moved.
Second. Discussion? Okay, Lisa Shepherd, note the time and do a roll call vote, please.
Okay, it's 8:41. Commissioner Warren?
Yes.
Mr. Colby?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdung?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Motion passes.
All right, Jenny, can you put everybody into the waiting room except those mentioned?
Recording.
Okay, I entertain a motion to return to open session.
So moved.
Second.
You get that, Jenny?
Mm-hmm.
Josh, okay. At 9:21?
None. Note the time and do roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdunk?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Motion passes. Okay, so we will move on. I entertain a motion to approve the staffing plan starting June 1 as presented.
So moved.
Second. Any discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Mr. Warren?
Yes.
Mr. Covey?
Yes.
Mr. Ludden?
Yes.
Mr. Underdog?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Motion passes. I entertain a motion to approve authority for the executive director to sign the real estate transaction documents for Linden House as presented.
It's not really as presented, it's just as needed.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Colby?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdung?
Yes.
Commissioner Brooks?
Yes. Motion passes. I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Okay. Motion passes.
Good job!